7 minutes after 11 o'clock. Tomorrow's the first day of summer, and you know what happens after that? It's all downhill. That's right, less light every day. People are like, yay, summer! It's like, yeah, you're getting less light. Less light every day until the deepest, darkest winter. Less light every day. All right, anyway, we'll talk about summer solstice on tomorrow's program. Joining us right now, every couple of weeks, we're lucky to talk to nutritional consultant Pam Colleen from London, Ontario. Hello, Pam.
Hey, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. You'll be proud to know I just finished my mid-morning snack, roast turkey.
Excellent.
With a little salt and pepper.
Excellent. I hope you had some butter on that bread, too.
No bread, just turkey, just the meat.
Just the meat.
That's all I want. I had my freezer. We have a freezer out in the garage, and it failed. And so all the food, were like, oh, no. But it was still somewhat frozen. So it had just failed in the past 12 hours or so. But it had started, everything had started to defrost. And then we had to triage all the frozen meat we had. And I was like, this turkey, I'm cooking this turkey. We had a picnic on Sunday. So I'm like, I'm cooking this turkey. And then we'll have turkey sandwiches at the Sunday picnic for my family. And then the leftover, as you always say, make a roast and use it for sandwich meat. Yeah. And it was, oh, I love turkey. Yeah. I love turkey.
Excellent.
So yeah, I'm lucky to have that all week.
Good.
I want to talk to you about this interesting story that that our poor mental health could be driving our obesity epidemic. Mm-hmm. That obesity and mental health, and not necessarily mental illness though, but that mental health are entwined, and we're just starting to figure it out now. Or some of us may know it, and we already knew that food and certain foods always drive us to stabilize moods. But now experts, especially nutritionists, are starting to think, you know what? It could be a big factor in why we're so... you and your book, The Hidden Epidemic About Addiction, mm-hmm. talk a lot about our unhealthy eating practices have led to a deterioration of our overall mental health. But as well, that's also feeding... you know, our obesity, we're eating poor and we're feeling worse than ever before. And the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, well, you sound like you've connected the dots. Unfortunately, the media speaks about this in very vague terms and uses terms like mental health contributes, mental health problems contribute to weight gain. And they mention things like, you know, the majority of people suffering with obesity tend to have more mental health problems and all this sort of language. But unfortunately, what they're not saying is that the connection between the two is largely a nutritional deficiency. And what we've seen in the last 100 years is a sharp increase in mental disorders in general, things like depression, for example, anxiety. And so as we've seen the deterioration of our food supply, the lack of quality of our food and the less nutrition in our food, we've seen an increase, not just in obesity, but we've seen an increase in mental health problems. In fact, we're about 100 times more likely to be depressed today than we were 100 years ago. And so they are connected, but what we're not being told is the nutritional deficiencies and problems that are underlying both conditions, and they just happen to be the same nutritional problems.
What I find interesting is the food we use to stabilize our mood is such a short-term fix. For instance, eating carbs produces serotonin, which raises our mood, but it also is such a short-term fix that it doesn't stabilize for long. But the long run, as we know, small-chain carbohydrates or simple starches and sugars add to the waistline and make us fatter. So we're getting this short-term fix, and then it's making us fatter, but then mm-hmm. That's it. And then the cycle repeats itself, and we never go and fix the long term. And do you think if we started to fix our brain, our body would follow?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't be mentally healthy without being physically healthy.
Right.
So
okay.
You have to fix the physical problems that are underlying whatever mental health woes people have. And so as we look back in history, of course, carbohydrates have been a drug. We've been using carbohydrates, especially the simple carbohydrates like sugar and juice, you know, to drug us. And when we invented agriculture 10,000 years ago, some believe that it became very popular simply because all these new carbohydrates in our diets were basically elevating our mood, that they were addictive, and no wonder we wanted to grow fields and fields and fields of corn and wheat and oats and barley, you know. So they do make people feel good, but just like you mentioned, Tom, it's a short-term euphoria, and unfortunately what it ends up doing is depleting the body of some very important nutrients, because by choosing carbohydrates over more stabilizing foods like steak or, you know, a high-fat cheese or sausage or what have you, you know, you're actually compromising both your physical and your mental health. So it does all work together, but unfortunately I just don't see people in mainstream media or even doctors connecting these dots.
Remember the study a little while ago, and it wasn't well publicized. I know we talked about the Harvard study where eating meat causes you to die sooner, but there was also the study eating meat makes you happier. Oh. Where there's that link between, you know, fat and protein together in the form of meat, mm-hmm. you know, satisfies the body in so many things, and that we have hormones set up to detect we've had enough fat, we've had enough, but we don't have one that's set up to detect enough carbohydrates. So that's why we, you know, perpetually overeat, why people could go through a loaf of bread or a box of cookies, because there's no off switch. Whereas a good piece of cheese or a good piece of meat, you're like, that's enough. I've had enough of that, and your body knows when to stop.
That's right, and that brings me to a new book that just came out. It's called The Happiness Diet, and it's co-authored by a psychiatrist who understands the importance of animal fat. Now, this is, it's hard to appreciate how rare this is, that a psychiatrist actually is embracing this notion that we need animal fat in our diet. And his name is Dr. Drew Ramsey. I did an interview with him a few weeks back. But the front cover of this book, you'd be happy to know, Tom, is a picture of a hamburger. And he qualifies it, and he says this and that meat for making that hamburger came from grass-fed cows. And so he even encourages his patients to go to farms and buy their food locally, and to make sure that the chicken's outside and then the cows are outside and the pigs are outside or what have you. So he's really a cut above in terms of a practicing medical doctor.
And as we've talked about before, I mean, I know people want to get in great physical shape, let's say. I know people, and we are so concerned about body image, even though our collective weight has never been higher, even mm-hmm. though we're getting fatter and fatter. If you're not happy, if you're not satisfied, if you're depressed or anxious, and I mean, and we're not talking schizophrenic or bipolar, but if you don't have a good quality of life from your brain, I mean, what's the point? Mm-hmm. If you're unhappy and skinny, would you not be rather fat? And I mean, you can do both. You can be happy and thin and in shape, but I mean, just the food choices we make are not contributing to us being happy. We're in worse shape than ever before.
That's
and
right.
We're mentally unhealthier than ever before.
That's right.
All right, when we come back, there's some other things I want to talk about, because sleep disorders, attention deficit disorders, post-traumatic stress addictions, all can lead to weight gain, and so can antidepressants, mood stabilizers, antipsychotics, all prescribed in record numbers. All can lead to rapid and dramatic weight gain. Like, it's all tied in. Our mental well-being and our physical well-being all tied in together. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program once again. Back to talk to her more about the greater links between poor mental health and our obesity epidemic. This is 610 CKTV. 20 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen joining us on the program, talking about the not-so-publicized links between our poor mental health and how overweight and obese we are as a society. Mm-hmm. And I found one of the telling signs that 66% of those who seek bariatric or weight loss surgery, which is a last resort for a lot of people, mm-hmm. have had at least one mental health disorder. That's mm-hmm. a huge correlation there.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when I work with people who have obesity issues and I look at their biochemistry, I mean, they're dealing with very, very low metabolism. Their adrenals are usually shut down. They feel terrible overall. They have a lot of pain and inflammation in their body generally. Sleep issues are very common. I mean, they're really, really struggling. There's over 40 health problems associated with obesity. But again, these health problems, the underlying issues surrounding them are going to be the same underlying issues surrounding the obesity. So we still need to look at malnutrition in both camps and let go of this notion that there's this association, but look more towards real solutions for these problems, because the more they use this rhetoric in the media, the less likely the solutions are going to come to the surface. And it's rare for me to see anything in the media that's actually part of the solution, because the sponsorship in the media, unfortunately, leads to the problem, and that would be things like a low-fat diet and so on. And I will say that there is some good news, hopefully, around the horizon, and that is that the BBC over in England is now producing what looks to be maybe a two-part series called The Men Who Made Us Fat. And they're basically doing an expose on the low-fat lie. And this is very rare to see in mainstream media. I've only seen one part of this series, Tom, but it's, so far it looks to me like this journalist has gone deep into the history of what's happened to our food supply in the last 50 to 100 years, and he's been able to connect the dots to see the terrible policymaking that's been going on and the corruption that's been going on in terms of our food supply. And so it's encouraging to me that the BBC has produced this series, and hopefully it will have an impact both in our universities and our governments and in the media overall.
What's interesting is when you talk about and use a term like malnutrition, and most people are like, malnutrition? What are we, in Somalia? Malnutrition, those are starving kids in Africa. But because of the quality of food people eat and the lack of nutrition in that food, people can, at the same time, it's the paradox, you are overweight and malnourished. Your brain is starving, and this is why you're in such a bad mood all the time.
Yeah, we have a bad mood epidemic, and we're stuffed and starved at the same time. So what we're eating is a lot of empty calories, and it's these empty calorie foods that are dysregulating our metabolism, which is leading to the accumulation of fat. And so basically, it's, you know, this obesity epidemic is because our hormones are a mess, and we know what messes up our hormones is going to be excessive carbohydrates in the diet.
The other thing that's interesting, too, and people don't pay a lot of attention to it, but the sleep cycle and how our poor sleeping habits have also led to rising, you know, an increase in weight gain.
That's right. And when people are under stress, you know, 24/7 stress, when they're out of what is normal, and that is a parasympathetic mode, we're supposed to be in a state of resting and digesting. But because we live in this fast new world, we are basically taxing our adrenal glands beyond their capacity, and we're overproducing hormones that keep us on an alert state, you know, 24/7. And that includes at night when we're supposed to be sleeping. So when people can't fall asleep at night, or if they fall asleep and can't stay asleep, it's because their body's saying they're running away from a lion. And so they're overproducing stress hormones when at that time, of course, you're supposed to be underproducing them. And so people's circadian rhythms are way out of kilter today because we have sent our bodies the wrong messages when really we're designed to be in a state of resting and digesting. So when I see people pushing and pushing and pushing themselves to get through the day, you know, and when they lie down at night, they can't fall asleep. And if they do fall asleep, they can't stay asleep.
Yeah. And then that just, again, is going back to your point, that screws up your hormones, and your hormones are going to tell your body you need energy or you need food. And this is going to throw everything off, that your bad sleep cycle is causing you to eat more than you should.
Right. And because you're producing the stress hormones like cortisol is going to drive insulin. Insulin's going to drive fat. So you're going to gain weight if you're not sleeping well.
Pam, where do you start, though? I mean, do you start with, if someone is overweight and, you know, and we all have, to some degree, some mental health disorder. I mean, that's part of the human condition. We'll all have a little depression, a little anxiety. We'll all have trouble sleeping at some point. Do we start by trying to fix that? Or do we start with the nutrition side? Like, where do you start? How do you tease it apart for your clients in terms of, all right, this is where you need to eat better, and this will lead to, do you focus on the weight or do you focus on the mood?
I actually just focus on educating people about the importance of eating 3 square meals per day.
Okay.
So when you talk to a lot of people who have mood problems, all right, you're going to see a common pattern, and that is that they're addicted to carbohydrates typically, and they tend to skip breakfast. Very common bad habit among people struggling with mood disorders.
Terrible habit.
Horrible habit. So for me, the top thing is education and motivating them to eat 3 square meals a day. And you'll notice people with mood problems also have a very poor appetite. So even when they have a poor appetite, I have to condition them, I have to force them almost to sit down every day and eat something that's going to stabilize their blood sugar, which in turn will help move towards a better mood. So in the morning, they must eat a wholesome breakfast that hopefully is based less on carbohydrates and more on animal fat. So a bacon and egg style breakfast is very, very stabilizing first thing in the morning. And then a meat and potato style lunch and dinner. And I say that figuratively. But, of course, if people do eat potatoes, it better be loaded with lots of butter and high-fat sour cream. I always say that those carbs are a good vehicle for getting more animal fat in the diet. So I just don't like people eating too many of those types of carbs.
How would you, on things where we're trying to stay more aware of, let's say, my finances, or people always recommend, if you're starting an exercise program, write everything down so you know how you progress. Do you ever recommend to your clients a mood diary, or do you often get them to write their foods down? Because I think it would be interesting to get a mood diary and a food diary mm-hmm. together to see how you feel when you eat and after you eat.
I don't do that type of thing personally. If people want to do that on their own, that's fine. But I do on my homepage, I have links to a lot of menu and meal ideas that people okay. tend to refer to help them guide through the day and see what to eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, where they're getting enough animal fat in their diet. Because I do see people still, no matter what I say about animal fat, they still want to believe that that box cereal is a healthy breakfast. And, you know, you're better off eating the box than you are the cereal, I'm telling you. It's not a healthy breakfast at all.
Just sitting down to my puffed box this morning. Just going to have that. Pour some milk over my box. That's it. I'm just going to... Cereal, that's for suckers. I'm going to eat the box. Pam Colleen, always a pleasure. I'm on vacation the next couple of weeks, but we'll talk to you in July.
That would be wonderful. Have a great time.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Tom.
Right. 29 minutes after 11 o'clock. For more information, of course, you can visit Pam's website. Let me just get this right. PamColleen.com. That's it. Simple. I just want to make sure I got it right. PamColleen.com. PamKilleen.com. Health and wellness coach, nutritional consultant. Pam Colleen. For more information, that's her website. Quick break in the program. News is next. When we come back,